You're listening to 88.5 FM, KTEP, your NPR station for the Southwest. I'm Angela Cocheriga, and welcome to the weekend. Joining me in the studio is Beto O'Rourke, who, of course, needs no introduction in El Paso. So welcome, Beto. I won't take time reading off for people who you are, and let's get right into the interview. But thank you for being here.
It's an honor to be with you. I'm very happy to.
Well, first, let's start with, how about that Whataburger? How that Whataburger with Joe Biden? Tell me about that.
Yeah. Well, listen, I thought long and hard about who I was going to vote for in this presidential primary in Texas. It wasn't an easy decision. And as I listen to other people in El Paso and across the state of Texas, I find that that's not uncommon. You have a lot of good candidates. You have a fairly contentious primary race, a lot of information to process, you know, how we do in the debates, how they perform in the town halls, what they say in interviews like this one. And so I wanted to make an informed decision. This is probably one of the most important decisions we're going to make, not just this year, but in our lives. I really think 2020 is going to be a decisive year for America and will determine the course we take in the future. And so relatively recently made the decision that I was going to vote for Joe Biden because I know that he can beat Donald Trump, because I know that whatever the ambitious progressive agenda we pursue, you need someone who can build coalitions and has relationships and can work across the aisle, and Joe can do that. And then for Texas, we have a once-in-a-generation opportunity to take a majority in the state house. We're only 9 seats down and we can win them, but it is somewhat contingent on who's at the top of the ticket. And if we do win the state house, we end the racist gerrymandering that exists in Texas. We also move forward on things like reducing gun violence, expanding access to healthcare, and taking the lead on confronting climate change, which is the existential threat to El Paso, to Texas, to the country, to the planet. And so That's how I made that decision. And I was talking to my oldest son, Ulysses, this past Sunday. I was driving him to his basketball game at SI over off Hawkins. And I said, hey, I'm going to vote for Joe. And he said, well, why don't you endorse him? And I said, well, tell me why you said that, Ulysses. And Ulysses, like Amy, probably like my family, is not stoked about me being a politician or being in public life or any of this stuff. But he said, look, and the logic was pretty convincing. He said, if you're going to vote for him, then you want him to win. And if you want him to win, you should do everything you can to help him do that. And so when the vice president called me on Monday, I said, hey, Beto, I'd love to have your help. I said, I'm in. Tell me what I can do. From that conversation came the endorsement at Gilly's in Dallas Monday night. And then we thought we'd go grab a Whataburger. And he was a good sport. He did that. He ordered a number one with cheese. I did a number two, a double. And my wife Amy was with us. And you know, the vice president, he had to talk to everyone there, which is great, which is part of his charm and his connection with people. And then we sat down and had a great conversation. I got to share with him things that are important to me, to us here in El Paso, U.S.-Mexico border, our relationship with Mexico, this chance to begin to remove the moral stain we've incurred under the Trump administration by the way that we treat the most desperate and vulnerable among us, including kids in cages and kids taken from their parents and kids who've lost their lives, 7 of them in our custody and care right here. So I wanted to make sure that I use that time to guarantee that the vice president understands what's important to us in Texas and particularly what's important to us here in El Paso.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions. The border has not figured prominently in the Democratic presidential candidate's campaign so far. Will you be providing some sort of advisory to the Biden campaign as they move forward, or what will you have a role?
I don't know if I'll have a role, and I'm really not looking for one. If I can be helpful, particularly on issues that are important to us and that we know better than anyone else, you know, our relationship with Mexico, the dynamic in the Western Hemisphere's largest binational community, the powerful positive impact that immigrants and asylum seekers and refugees have had, not just in El Paso's success or the success of Texas, but this country. I mean, we are singular and unique in the world in how we are a people of the planet over who have found a home here and made us the greatest place on the planet. I want that to be a core message for whoever our nominee is and whoever the next president is. And if I can contribute to that conversation, I will be there. I just want to help. Like so many of us, and that includes people who are voting for another candidate, folks who might support the current president. I think we all just want to make sure that this country realizes its potential, that we create a great future for our kids and our grandkids, and that we take seriously this critically important year in our lives. There'll never be a moment or an opportunity like this one. Let's make the most of it.
Well, speaking of a moment, talk to me about Super Tuesday and Texas. Did the needle move a little closer to purple, or are people making too much of that? What are your thoughts after seeing what happened?
Yeah, I don't know that it's possible to extrapolate from the results the chances that Democrats are going to have in November in Texas. What I can tell you from having traveled every county and campaigned across the state for basically the last 3 years is that Texas truly is not a red state, and it's certainly not a blue state. It is a state that has yet to prove itself and to turn out in the numbers that would reflect our power, our genius, the diversity of ideas and experiences and background. And I hold a very strong hope that will come to pass in 2020. We saw extraordinary turnout in 2018, largest turnout in a midterm election ever. We certainly exceeded 2016 numbers last night, Tuesday night in Texas. So I think that bodes well. And I'm going to continue in my personal capacity to do everything I can to encourage greater turnout, certainly for these Democratic state house candidates, so we can get that majority in the state house. And then whoever the Democratic nominee is, if it is Joe Biden, if it is Bernie Sanders, if it is Elizabeth Warren, I will do everything within my power to make sure that they're successful here in Texas and successful as the next president of the United States.
Well, let's talk about, the turnout and kind of get into a little bit about, it's a divided country, but also we see some deep divisions in the Democratic Party. How do you what are you seeing as you right after the primary as some of the rhetoric and how do you bring moderates and progressives together?
I think we largely share the same agenda. We want everyone to be able to see a doctor. We don't want anyone denied a prescription or the ability to see a therapist or a counselor, so that they can be at their best and do well for themselves, but also do well for all of us. We get that climate change is the defining crisis of human civilization, and how we meet that crisis will define us forever. We want immigrants to be treated like the human beings that they are. We want criminal justice reform because we imprison more people than any other country on the face of the planet, disproportionately people of color in this country. And so I don't know that you'll find a lot of space between the candidates on that. There are different proposals for the means to achieve those goals. There's certainly different personalities and character that you see in the remaining contenders. But I really hope that at the end of the day, we all are on the same page and understand that in order to achieve any of our ambitions, we have to defeat Donald Trump at the ballot box in November, that Texas can play a critical role in being able to do that. And that we all need to rally behind and around the next president, whoever she or he is, to make sure that they're successful with this agenda. But I want to say this. Though I voted for Joe Biden, I was so impressed, still am impressed, with Elizabeth Warren, her intelligence, her integrity, the intensity with which she has run this campaign so far. I think she'd make an excellent president. I am so impressed with Bernie Sanders, the consistency in the big ideas that he's brought to the table, the conversation that he has shifted in this country. Whatever success we have on a progressive agenda, whether or not he's a president, he will deserve much of the credit for that. And his supporters in particular, and especially the youngest among them, so passionate, so idealistic, both of those characteristics are going to be critically important for the success of whoever the nominee is, and their chances of achieving an ambitious agenda. So, Angela, to your point, I want to do everything I can to help bring people together. And I'll start by saying this: whoever the nominee is, even if it's not my preferred candidate, I will do everything in my power, go to the ends of the earth for them to make sure that they're successful. And I just hope that everyone who wants to defeat Donald Trump, who wants to see someone else in the White House, will make that same commitment now, not later. And that just ensures that we have greater unity at the moment that we need it.
Well, that is a question, because some of the Bernie supporters sat out the election when Hillary Clinton was the nominee. And he packed his rally here in El Paso. He did very well along the border with Latinos, especially young people. A lot of those people voted for you. What would you say to them about participation and engagement in this process?
I'm proud of El Paso. I'm proud when anyone is engaged, when they come to a Bernie rally, or they went out to see Mike Bloomberg, or they got involved in the local DA race, or one of these judicial elections. I'm especially grateful when people vote. And this is the unique genius of the United States of America. You and I may disagree about our preferred candidate or the policies that we want them to pursue, but we're able to do that peacefully, nonviolently, through elections and campaigns and our politics. And let's not lose sight of that. And let's remember that at the end of the day, before you define yourself by the candidate that you voted for or the political party to which you belong or anything else, we're Texans, we're Americans, we're human beings. And the ability to hear one another out and ultimately come to an agreement that we're going to pursue the common good for this country. That's what this country needs. We are so divided right now. This country is so highly polarized. There's so much invective and vitriol in our public discourse. If ever we needed to heal and come together, it's now. And this today may not be the moment that we come together. But as long as we hold that as a goal and are able to achieve it after the nominee is decided, I think we'll be okay. And so whoever you voted for and whatever you want to see happen for this country, let's make sure that we remember, our shared humanity and our shared goals for what we want to do.
Well, you raised a good point, and I'll bring it up because it's been brought up a couple times already, the Bernie bros and how they react when, for example, recently Veronica Escobar had a backlash because she wasn't necessarily supporting Bernie as the final nominee. And now, of course, she has endorsed Joe Biden. Very concerning for her. She said she was surprised to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I completely understand it. And we can disagree and still be decent to one another. We can have contrasting points of view and still be civil. And remember that at the end of the day, we're pursuing the same goals. I mean, find me a more progressive member of the United States Congress than Veronica Escobar. Find me a more ardent champion of the U.S.-Mexico border and immigrant families and the best values that we hold so dear here in El Paso, and make us such a shining example for the rest of the country. You can disagree with the candidate that she endorsed or a given decision that she made, but to be unkind to her or mean to her, there's just no place for that. And that's not who we are in El Paso. We don't do that stuff to one another. And certainly I don't see her acting that way towards the supporters of other candidates. So I think she's setting a great example. I hope it's one that the rest of us can follow. And the last thing we need is that kind of division and divisiveness in the Democratic Party, because our threat is not Joe Biden. It's not Bernie Sanders. It is Donald Trump. It is very possible, should he win election, this is my opinion, that come January 2021, we cement a transition from a democracy and a republic and a representative form of government into something else, into the kind of strongman rule that we see our current president respond to all over the world. He's made no secret about his ability to undermine the Constitution or to amass more power or to openly suggest that there will be not a Trump presidency, but a regime. And that might exist far beyond 2024, as he suggested in some of what he said and some of what he's tweeted. So let's keep our eyes on the prize and be mindful about what the real challenge is. And it's not any of your fellow Democrats. It's the guy in the White House right now.
You're listening to The Weekend. I'm Angela Kochergan. My guest is Beto O'Rourke. We're talking about the Texas primary and much, much more. What do you expect the next few months to be like as we get closer to November, especially for the border region? As we've seen in the past, we kind of become this big political piñata that's bashed for points, and we know it's become a key part of President Trump's reelection campaign.
This is a wonderful time to be alive and to live on the U.S.-Mexico border. You're right. We've been at the center of the conversation. The entire campaign that Donald Trump ran in 2016 was predicated on building a wall. And in his presidency, he has unleashed unprecedented hatred on immigrants, on Mexicans, on Mexican Americans, on anyone, frankly, who does not look like or love like the majority in this country. And there's been a real cost and consequence to that. It doesn't just offend us. It leads to a change in practice and policy. And it's not just caging kids or losing the lives of those kids who are in our care here on the U.S.-Mexico border. It's the violence that has been unleashed against anyone who's perceived as a threat to whatever the president thinks once made America great. And that could be the dominance of white men in this country. And so it's not a stretch to connect the president's rhetoric about immigrants and calling them an invasion or describing asylum seekers as an infestation. An infestation is a word that we would use to describe termites or cockroaches, something subhuman. To have someone at a Trump rally suggest that you shoot those who are trying to come into this country, it's not a stretch to connect all of that with someone who would drive 600 miles with an AK-47 and come to a Walmart intent upon repelling an invasion. Again, the very word the president used. And slaughter those who call El Paso and Ciudad Juarez home. That is what we are up against. And so that happened to us. That was not an act of God. It was not a freak occurrence. It was wholly predictable based on what this president's done, his words and his actions. And so what is our response going to be to that? If we sit home, if we don't vote in the numbers commensurate with the crisis and the threat that we face, I guarantee you we are going to see more of the same. So this is a real test for us here in El Paso and along the border. But I said this is a great time to be here and to be alive because I think we are more than a match for this moment. And I think we will meet this test. I think we will overcome this challenge. It is not going to be easy. And I think it is incumbent upon all of us to reach out to everyone in our lives that uncle who hasn't voted since 1984, he just thinks the system doesn't work or it's rigged. That younger brother or sister who has yet to register to vote. Your grandmother who just got her citizenship. All of us need to be brought in to this election. That means registering to vote. And that means making a commitment to vote. And it means being engaged. I mean, listening to this program, reading local news, going on to the El Paso Matters website and doing the due diligence necessary to make an informed vote at the ballot box. But in a democracy, there are no sidelines. You don't get to sit this stuff out. Your responsibility in having the privilege of citizenship is to be engaged in civic life. And if ever there were a time to do it, it's now. And if ever there were a place to lead the charge, it's El Paso.
What are the next few months looking like for you?
I want to focus on making sure that we bring this to pass. So I'm going to do everything I can to help register as many unregistered folks in Texas, hopefully those who are likely Democrats who can help us to defeat Donald Trump. Imagine if Texas, with its 38 electoral college votes, were the state that stopped Donald Trump in his tracks and made crystal clear to this country in a way that could not be exploited by this unscrupulous president that he had lost not only the popular vote, but in a decisive way, the electoral college vote as well. So if we're going to do that, we need to bring hundreds of thousands, literally millions of unregistered Texans into our democracy. And I'm going to do everything I can to do that. And then I'm going to help down ballot state house candidates so that we win that majority in the state house that we need for Texas really to realize its potential and to pursue those things that whether you're a Democrat, an independent, or Republican, you know are important. Reducing gun violence, expanding access to health care, confronting climate change before it's too late.
And during your Senate campaign, you went literally to every place you could in Texas and reached across the aisle to talk to Republicans and moderates and people who maybe hadn't thought of voting for you. What would you say to those voters who are also right now a big chunk of those undecideds?
There are so many Republicans that I've listened to who are alarmed about where this country is and the conduct of this president and the threat to the rule of law and the Constitution that has set us apart from so much of the rest of the world. They need to be welcomed and not ostracized. We cannot be so orthodox in our views, so intent about finding the heretics and expelling them from the party or our election or our democracy, that we lose this historic opportunity to bring a very divided country together. And so I may not agree with everything that my formerly Republican mother agrees with, right? we may have diverging views on a few things that are important to each other, but I think we have found common ground on the threat that this president poses, on some good things that we want to achieve, on lessons that we've learned here in El Paso about the cost and consequence of the racism, the white nationalism, the gun violence that has consumed so much of this country. And so let's be open to one another and good to one another and kind to one another and welcoming to one another. I think that's the way that you build a coalition that wins these important elections this year, including the most important of them all, the presidential, and defeating Donald Trump.
What concerns you most as we head towards November?
Well, you've really hit upon it in this interview. I think the division that we see within the Democratic Party, the descent of our discourse into a mean, vengeful, dark place, exacerbated and accelerated by social media and the anonymity that we enjoy by launching attacks on one another, stuff that we would never say face to face, but somehow feel comfortable doing when we're separated by these screens. I think that imperils not only our opportunity to win these important elections, I think it undermines civility and the commonality that's necessary for a democracy like ours to survive. I mean, you think about the genius of America. How in the world is it that, my family from Ireland, someone else is from Japan, another person's from Iran or Mexico, could all come to this one place, and despite our differences in ethnicity or race or any other thing that might keep us apart in any other part of the world, we're able to come together here. That's really special and is the exception, not the rule in human history. And there's a very real chance that we'll lose this right now unless we can find a way to come together. And look, that doesn't mean that you have to diminish the intensity of your views or the way you engage politically. Go out there and fight for what you believe in, but do so in a way that acknowledges that the other person has a right to their views and their opinions, and that probably at the end of the day, they love this country every bit as much as you do and care about their kids as much as you care about yours. So find those things that bring us together instead of separate us. I think that's our challenge, and that's really what concerns me right now.
Well, I have to ask because, of course, as I was out interviewing people, voters at different places and rallies and door knocking, many brought up your name and were disappointed that, of course, you suspended your campaign. We heard at Pete Buttigieg's speech, people yelling 2024. People are wondering that about you. What are you thinking that far ahead?
No, I really am focused on this year, and I really can't stress enough how decisive this moment is going to be for us. And I think all of us should think about what we are going to do so that when we're looking in the mirror 5, 10 years from now, when our kids are asking us what we did at this moment of truth, that we have a really good answer. So I'm focused on that, and who knows what will come afterwards. I'm so happy to be back in El Paso, to be able to run or hike in the Franklin Mountains, to come around Sun Bowl Drive, not too far from where we're recording this, and look out over Ciudad Juarez on a beautiful, clear day like this one. The rain and the storms from yesterday kind of washed out the pollution and just makes it crystal clear right here. There's no other place like El Paso on the planet, and we are so lucky to live here. So I'm really enjoying being in El Paso and just want to make the most of it while I join with so many other good people around this country to make sure that we answer the call this year and do what's necessary to get the United States back on the right track.
Well, you listed many of the things I love about El Paso, so I can't agree more. And so you're not ruling out having a political role in the future, running for office again, high office.
I'm not ruling anything out. I've been so fortunate to serve on the El Paso City Council, to represent this community in Congress, to run a statewide race for U.S. Senate that was historic and fun, to run for the presidency of the United States of America. Never in my wildest dreams going to Mesita Elementary here in El Paso did I ever imagine that I'd have the opportunity to do this and to do it with so many wonderful volunteers here in El Paso. This was the strength and the heart and soul of everything that I've had a chance to be a part of. So certainly if there's a wonderful opportunity, if there's some way in which I can serve, I'd love to consider that. If that's not in the cards, I'm good with that too. I've been blessed with my family, with living in this city, and I'm open to whatever comes down the road.
Great. Anything I didn't ask you'd want to mention?
No, I love that you are focused on this moment, these elections, and the future of this country, and the role that El Paso can play. I'm thinking about these same things, and very grateful that I had the chance to talk with you today.
Well, thank you for making time. I know you've got a hectic schedule, and you just got back into town. Beto O'Rourke has been my guest, and you're listening to The Weekend, and we have much more. We hope to have you back again soon as the campaigns continue. I'd like to thank Sam Cassiano, our sound engineer and producer. And I'd like to thank you for listening. I'm Angela Kocherga. Go out and have a great weekend.